Hello and welcome to the Eastman's Predator Pros podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Nimnick, and I'm back for another episode. But unfortunately, my coyote season has ended. That's right, I do have self-regulated coyote season. You may be listening to this and say, well, you can hunt coyotes year-round. I know. Here in Nebraska, you can hunt coyotes year-round too. But I've always had, I call it, like I said, a self-regulating season. Time to move on to some new things. You know, I got baseball coming up. I got my lawn care business. Kind of looking forward to that. You know, when you go as hard as I do for the last, 5 months hunting coyotes, 65, 70 days, I think I chalked up about, 27, 28,000 miles on my pickup. You know, did break the 350 coyote mark. So that was cool. Didn't quite top my mark from a year ago, but man, it was just an awesome season nonetheless. So, but I'm ready. I'm ready to move on. And yeah, I know it's a self-regulated season. Yeah, I could hunt coyotes year round here in Nebraska if we wanted to. I'm sure you can in your states. And I'm sure some of you listen are kind of like me, kind of self-regulate the season. Some might hunt coyotes the whole year. That's cool. You know, whatever floats your boat. But for me, it's time to move on and get on to some other things. And I'll tell you, it's kind of like the absence makes the heart grow fonder kind of a deal. After I get away from coyote hunting here for the next 6 months, 7 months, I tell you, come August, man, I'll be itching again. I'll be planning trips and last stand trip, you name it. I'll be doing it all. So I kind of look forward to that. So on to baseball, as I like to say. But on this episode, got my good buddy, Dustin Patterson. We had a filming trip down to Arizona for the last stand back in January. So we were just going to talk about that trip a little bit. If we can remember, it's been so long since we were down there, but we're going to talk about that trip a little bit. You guys won't be seeing that footage until October. It'll be launching season 7 of The Last Stand, like I said, on the Lucky Duck YouTube channel. So be looking for that come later this year. But we're going to talk. Dustin still hunts a lot of contests, so I kind of want to pick his brain about his contest season and just who knows, whatever we get to talking about there. But before we jump into this, I need to thank the sponsors of this episode, which are Onyx Hunt and Swagger. I don't know what I could really say about Onyx. I mean, it just seems like it's a tool we're always using. I'm sure you're using, if you're not using Onyx, I'm sure you're using something similar. I've always liked Onyx. It's what I've always used. It does everything I need. Just tracking, storing waypoints, looking at land ownership, looking at satellite imagery. It's just a great tool, with the advancement technology and things nowadays. It really does help me when it comes to becoming a better coyote hunter. So like I said, I'm assuming probably everybody listening to this has some sort of app, but if you don't, pull up your app store, you can go to Onyx Hunt. And, then you can see, the different membership options. If you just want your state, you can do the Elite membership, which gives you access to all the states. Maybe you travel a little bit. That's what I have, the Elite one, just because I travel so much and things like that. But, pull up your app store, search Onyx Hunt, and you can find out, how that can benefit you as a coyote hunter. Now, with Swagger Bipods, once again, I talk about them all the time. Love shooting them. As always, I want to hook you up with my promo code. If you're looking to jump into a set, maybe the 142s, that's what I run. And the reason that I do get this question, they sell both a Hunter 29 and a 142. That refers to the length of the leg. So if you sit on any sort of side hill whatsoever, you're definitely going to want that 42. But then they do have the QD option as well, so. That's what, if you watch The Last Stand, that's what Rick likes running is the QDs. I run the Hunters, like I said. It just depends on what your preference is. They got a little bit of something for everybody. I want everything hooked to my gun. I want hands-free. When you drag a lot of coyotes back to the truck, you figure out real quick how hands-free can I be, because you don't want to be carrying a bunch of crap and then trying to drag coyotes on top of it. So that's why I go with the 142. I just hook it to my gun. My gun's already heavy the way it is. I got big scope suppressor. So I'm not worried about the weight. It's not like we're packing in miles. It's, a couple 200-300 yards in standing out. So it's not like it's a big deal if the gun's heavy or not, but I want it all attached. So yeah, you can head over to the Swagger website. And if you do make an order, use the promo code Coyote Craze 25, all one word. And that'll give you 25% off your next order. So on to the podcast. Dustin, it's great to have you back on the podcast, man.
Yeah, good to be back.
Our seasons are over. Are you as impressed as I am?
Yeah, I'm getting there.
I'm getting there. You know, for me, it's at least back to the real world. You kind of the same thing, right? You kind of seasonal work. Like, you're like, damn, now we got to get back to it.
Yeah, unfortunately, work will be kicking off here pretty soon. But I still got snow geese and turkeys to play with right now.
That's right. I forgot you do that snow goose thing, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
They started my boy was actually out chasing them last Sunday. Said there was a bunch. They couldn't get any to decoy.
Yeah.
But yeah, you guys getting a big push of them down there right now?
They actually left like early. Most of them were in Nebraska before Kansas even opened. So it's been a lot quicker than average. Yeah, they're already in North Dakota.
Damn. Yeah. Kind of another byproduct of our weak winter we all had.
Yeah, exactly.
That's wild. Using that lucky duck call on that?
Yeah.
Is that snow goose sounds? You originally recorded some of those sounds that are on that lucky duck call, didn't you?
Yeah, I recorded all of them that were on the original ones when they came out with the new one, the Snow Devil. Sean recorded a bunch of new sounds for it.
Gotcha. Well, I can tell you the first thing I delete off there is the Snow Goose folder when I get a new call.
You wouldn't want one. It
tells
one,
you how much I care about that.
Yeah, you wouldn't want one.
I thought it'd be fun to get you on the podcast. You know, we were down in Arizona back in January, filming for some Last Stand stuff. That's obviously stuff that people aren't going to see yet. That's going to kick off season 7 coming in up in October. So I thought it'd be fun to kind of talk about that hunt. It's kind of an annual deal we do. And then we just talk about the seasons, you know, kind of a little season recap. I know you and I talked a lot about that in January, just some, you know, things that went on this season that were kind of like, oh man, it just kind of sucked for part of it, you know? And then,
yeah,
you know, so overall, let's start with the season thing. What would you rate your season in general?
Yeah.
If you had to give your season a grade, what would you give it?
It's tough because it looked like a stock market chart this year, you know, all the up and down, but I'd probably give it like a C- as far as like contests and stuff went. I didn't do as much fun hunting as normal. I did more contests than normal, but we didn't do as good in the contests as we normally do. So struggled.
Well, if you won them all the time, they just call you cheaters. You gotta give the other guys a chance to win every now and then.
True. Very true.
I don't know. You know, every year it seems like it's always a little bit different. You know, for me, you know, I think last year, I think we killed 389 coyotes. But I remember last year we had so much snow and I had a hard time getting to a lot of my ranches up here for a big chunk of the winter. And then I think back and I'm like, man, we still killed that many coyotes. And then this year we had access. The weather was better. You know, maybe it was warm. I don't know if that just affected the coyote. Talk about the coyote bubble a lot, you know, like the motivation, you know, that they have to come to the call.
Yeah.
You know, this year, you know, we were right about 346. You know, so it was a little less. I feel like I hunted more than ever. You know, it's weird how it goes from year to year like that.
I just didn't notice any consistency this year. There wasn't. It was just a flip of the switch. It seemed like every time, sometimes it was completely off and sometimes it was completely on. I didn't have any like middle of the road days for the most part, especially during the contest. It was either on or off.
Yeah. And I got a lot of messages from guys too, that same thing that they were, you know, especially like when we got into that late December, January timeframe, I was getting messages from guys like, hey man, I've been struggling, coyotes, see them, you know. And it's hard when somebody sends you a message like that, right? Because there's so many variables out there. Like, I can't get them all, but I don't know. I kind of saw the same thing on my, you know, a lot of the stuff that I was hunting around here. Like, it just seemed like there were lots of coyotes early. And then it just kind of went, you know?
Yeah.
Makes me wonder sometimes, you know, I know we take a lot of, just as coyote hunters, we're always looking at like, you know, we base a lot off the sounds, right? Like, oh God, that sound's not working. You know, what I heard this year a lot was a lot of guys, and I hear this every year, but, you know, maybe one particular pup distress, you know, was working for me. And A, because that's the pup distress I was probably playing the most, right?
Yeah.
You know, some other guy would send me a message and say, oh, I've been having luck with this other pup distress or this fight. Or maybe it's a prey distress sound that's working and I'm using this rabbit, and somebody else says, oh, I've been really slaying them on this rabbit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it, to me, it all kind of plays into the fact that is the actual sound that we're playing as important as we all think it is?
I doubt it. I think it's mostly in your head.
Yeah. I mean, the more and more I do this, the more I think is, that's why kind of when I try to teach this stuff, I talk about more sound categories than specific sounds, right? Like,
yeah,
I've always been a big believer that a rabbit's a rabbit. And maybe some coyotes, there's a certain type of rabbit that maybe triggers them, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, on those days that you said are just, they're off, right? Was it just because there was no coyotes there? Were the coyotes just super locked down, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's in your country, it's one of the, you know, in Eastern Kansas, Southwest Eastern Kansas, whatever you want to call that, like, it's probably hard to imagine that there wasn't a coyote within a half mile when you set up and called, because densities are so thick, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, out in my country, I can see that happening every now and then, because our coyotes do get scattered way out and they're not as thick in parts. But yeah, you know, so it makes you wonder, like, why, right? Like,
yeah,
what are all the factors involved? Like, why today do those coyotes feel like running to the call, and tomorrow they're, you know, unless you're like right on top of them,
yeah,
forget it.
Yeah, I noticed some of the days when they weren't showing up or not there or just not coming in, that it wasn't, I think they were there because we would see random ones here and there sneaking in, and that'd be about all we'd see of them, and they're gone. Whereas in more open country, those guys that are shooting 300-400 yards might have got some more cracks than we did, because I always hunt the thick stuff. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's tough. If you knew the answer to that, you would probably be winning every single contest and always have 10 in the truck.
So this is what my theories and philosophies are always changing a little bit. So those days when you said it was really tough, like the coyotes were sneaking in, did you have any coyotes at all those days that did come running in like they were supposed to?
Maybe like two.
Two, right?
Yeah.
Two, right? So I'm like, so not every coyote out there was doing that sneaky shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, there were some coyotes that did what they were supposed to. And that's kind of my philosophy, is like, I think a lot of guys on those type of days start going way deep into the folders and trying to find that secret sound and sitting there longer. Yeah. When I almost do the opposite, I'm like, okay, there are a few of these coyotes out here that still want to do what we want them to do.
Yeah.
So why not make it even more of a ball buster day and just freaking go make boom, 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 and try to find as many of those coyotes, even though they're far and few between those days, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting to kind of look at guys' philosophies when it comes to how they handle, you know, those situations.
It's tough though to do that when you're already, so like those contest days I'm talking about where we did struggle during a contest, it's like 23 to 28 stands in a day. I mean, you're already busting them out pretty damn fast. And then to be able to do more than that, I mean, you'd be cutting your stands down quite a bit, like 5-minute stands just to maybe get a couple more to bust in quick.
So if you're already, in my opinion, if you're already making that many, you know, I'm talking about if you're the type of guy that's been sitting there making longer ones, 12, 15 in a day.
Yeah.
Okay, let's try to cut them down enough to get 20. But yeah, I mean, I knew your philosophy is already like that. You know, you're not sitting there a crazy long time to begin with anyway. But, you know, the thing that always amazes me on those type of days too is, you know, you go to check in, right? And we pounded them out. We thought we had good ground. Meaning, you know, hadn't seen a whole lot of pressure, not a lot of coyotes hopefully had been killed off of that ground in previous months, you know, and we end up with two or three, and then here comes a team that checks in seven or eight.
Yeah.
You know, what is that difference, right? Like,
yeah,
We obviously, if you've hunted a contest, there's always the possibility that cheating took place. But let's throw that aside. Let's say if that didn't happen and they really did, and they were hunting within an hour of or two of where you were, what was the difference, right?
Yeah. That's the thing I struggle with in my head, is wondering what that switch is and how definite that line is between where it's happening and where it's not happening. I mean, an hour away could be completely different weather. You could have sun, you could have not as much wind, you could have more wind, cloudy versus not cloudy. I'm sure low pressure, high pressure, there's got to be a difference between an hour away. Sometimes there's got to be a line, sometimes in there weather-wise. I don't know what it is, but if I knew what it was, I would wake up that morning and only go to the map where it was in good favor. But I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's why I'm more and more, I'm like, you know, control the things that you can control, right? Like, we can't control any of that. I mean, people ask, I mean, I'm sure you get asked this too, like, moon phase, barometric pressure, all that stuff. Like, what if we knew, right? Like, would it really change anything? Like, no, that day of your contest hunt, let's just say it was a, let's say if somebody told you, oh, on the days where the barometric pressure is dropping or below this, oh, don't even bother, the coyotes ain't going to bother coming, they're just going to sit tight. And that was your day of the contest, right? Like, and you looked at the map and said, oh, well, hell, it's going to be the same barometric pressure within 3 hours, and I don't have anywhere else that far to go. Like, does it matter? Like, you're still probably going to go and say, all right, I'm going to go give it a shot.
Yeah, you're probably hosed at that point. But I don't know. It'd be interesting. I've never really done that and looked at, like, a barometric pressure map to see the differences in, a, like, I don't know, 100-mile square area, just to see what the differences would be. I've never really done that. I've always just looked where I'm at. Not that I've correlated it or wrote it down or anything like that.
I know there's guys out there that keep logs, but I don't know if they ever, it would take massive amount of coyotes, right? Like, most guys, I don't think kill enough coyotes to probably have a legitimate, you know, pool of data to probably make it that you could really see anything. But I don't know. It's one of those things we'll always debate and look at. We'll never know the answer to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I always lean more towards the property you're hunting, right? Like, to me, that's, I mean, God dang, if you can get on a spot that is still maxed out on coyotes, right? Meaning none of the coyotes, you haven't killed off coyotes at all that year in there. So it's max carrying capacity, you know, and then none of those coyotes have been messed with. Yeah. I mean, if you can find spots like that, you know, to me, that's about the only thing you really have control over. And even then, you don't even have control over that half the time, you know? So,
yeah. And that's what leads me to something else is affecting their moods or habits or activity for the day, is just because usually in the contest we'll have, you know, maybe like a 30 or 40 minute area, you know, from one stand to the other, 30, 40 minutes if you drove straight across, but we've got a scattering all across the map right in that area. And it's 6, 7, 8 different landowners or more that we're hunting on, and it's different sections, you know. It's not like we're all just right in the same area. It's a splatter all over the map in the county we're in. All different landowners, all different habitats. There's no way that all of that got hit, you know, and especially when you're dealing with landowners that own a bunch and tell you you're the only one that's hunting it, and you haven't hunted it, you're saving it, and you go to it, and then you just flop. I mean,
depression sets in.
Yeah, if those coyotes are there, something else is affecting them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, all you can do is just have a good plan, you know? Yeah. And as you and I both know, some days the plan works out great and you freaking pile the truck this high. Other days, it's like you're looking at each other, scratch your head like, damn, we just totally got dominated today and I don't even know why.
Yep, that's the one, the head scratcher ones. Those ones suck. I could do without any more of those.
Well, you might as well give up contests if you don't want to deal with that anymore, because like I said, it's bound to happen sooner or later. You're gonna be like, dang, I don't even know what happened, but we got smacked.
Can't always hit a home run. You're gonna strike out every now and then.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. You know, down in Arizona, that happened to us a handful of times. You know, I look back, you know, at the areas that we hunted where we did super great, and then you come back the next year and it's like seems like there's coyotes in there.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, you know, you damn near strike out and you're just like, holy crap, I don't even know what happened.
Yep. That's why I like what we did this year a little bit better, that moving around thing. I mean, you don't have any of that preconceived notion on we killed 12 in here in half a day last year. We're going to come in here and train wreck them again this year. I kind of like that not knowing. And then it seems like you and I have a real good knack when we're together of picking areas and picking them apart, finding coyote sign, finding the coyotes, and then having a good day, or at least a decent day.
Well, you and I, you know, we've had some really crazy days over the, you know, so I always have to kind of set myself back and say, if we kill four or five today, it's still a pretty good day. I mean, like in the whole scheme of things, right? Like if you hunted coyotes, you know, if you only hunted coyotes 8 days a year and you could cherry pick every, and you had tons of property, you might expect better than that. But if you hunt coyotes 40, 50, 60, 70 days a year, you have to expect them like I do. I mean, I have one coyote days, two coyote days, 10 coyote, you know, I have all over the board.
Yeah.
You know, it all averages out, but that's one thing I setting expectations sometimes, you know, it's like, like that last day, you know, down in Arizona, we just said, hell, let's shoot out of here. Let's just wing it. Right.
Yeah.
You know, some days we've done that before and where it's like, bam, it's just, everything's lining up perfect. And it seems like, you know, but you know, I always feel like if you can kill three or four or five coyotes in a day of just winging it on stuff you've never been to, it's pretty dang successful, I think.
Especially for filming. I mean, that's a different mindset, too, that I'm sure you had to go through, that I go through a lot. I don't film as much as you, but, you know, I'm a contest hunter mostly. I want those bam, bam, bam days. You know, if I go three, four stands without seeing a coyote, that's where I start, you know, like, what's going on? What are we doing wrong? We need to start doing this and this. We need to have some more success. But when you're filming, I mean, four or five in a day is really not that bad. That's a good day.
Yeah, I think, we just get some, like I think I told you before we went, I'm like, man, we're not, you know, because last year we went down there, it wasn't real great. You know, we killed coyotes, but killed some bobcats, but, so I'm like, all right, we just got to lower expectations a little bit so we're not so depressed when, you know, we don't kill 16 in a day, you know, or anything like that.
Yeah.
Expectations, man. That's what it's all about, I guess.
Yeah, they'll set you up for failure or success, whichever way you look at them or whichever way you have your expectation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, that the stuff that we, you know, went to, you know, we traveled kind of all around, you know, kind of hit different chunks of Arizona. We kind of this time we kind of stayed down in southern, what I call the desert stuff. You know, we've been all over the years, but, you know, seems like that southern part, and I'm sure everybody that's in Arizona listening to this is like, damn, they're giving away all of our secrets. You know, we're going to have all these guys. Yeah. But trust me, there's millions of acres of area down there. I mean, how much ground can one coyote hunter cover in a season, honestly?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's coyotes everywhere, but, you know, it seems like, I don't know, for me anyway, I always felt like the highest densities of coyotes were like in the most arid desert part of Arizona.
Yeah. I think it's easier living for the most part. I think you just got more small animals that make it through the winter. You know, there's no snow cover ever, so there's no digging through snow to find mice or anything like that.
Yeah, I some of that desert stuff we hunt, I look at that and I'm like, Jesus, this stuff looks like it does not look great. Like, I don't know, if you looked across, you're like, damn, how's anything even living out here? And then fucking coyotes running everywhere.
Yeah.
And then you get up north and it's like, oh, all this yellow grass and juniper trees and rocky little canyons. And you're like, oh man, this looks great. And it's like, man, there's just not as many coyotes up here, you know, at least some of those pockets.
It's the damn juniper berries, Jeff. You know it is.
Yeah, if you've listened to this podcast from the start, you've probably heard Dustin and I talking about our juniper berry theory. when you're up north and it's all probably, you know, this is probably no different than probably northern New Mexico, southern Arizona, southern Utah. They get those juniper trees and they have these berries on them. And we've been up there multiple times when all you see, every pile of coyote shit everywhere you look, is nothing but 100% juniper berries.
Yeah.
And you're like, what in the hell's going on? And then Dustin starts researching that juniper berries are a appetite suppressant.
Yeah.
And
Yeah,
you're
there
like,
was actually
yep.
like a scientific study on it that said that they were an appetite suppressant.
Yeah,
But
and then you're like, well, that's we'll chalk that up to the reason we're not calling any coyotes. They're
yeah.
just lazy and just laying there full of juniper berries.
It's probably all in our head, but it sounds good. And when you make a stand, like it was like 75% of the stands when we get into that situation. When you're walking in or when you're sitting down, there's a pile of coyote crap somewhere within that you've seen just walking in or sitting down that's
Yeah.
full of juniper berries. And it's like every stand you go into, it's like that. And those you it feels like there's coyotes everywhere when you see that, but then you end up not getting any kind of response. And I don't know.
Yeah. I love my, I love our theories, I think, that to me, that's all of coyote hunting, right? Honestly, like
Oh,
all the stuff that we just got in talking about from the start of this podcast. And essentially everything that you can think of when it comes to coyote hunting is really just a theory. Like, I don't, we, you can't prove any of this.
no, you can be
Like your sounds.
consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you can't, like, let's just throw something out there. Like, oh, I howled in that coyote. Okay. Well, howling. Yeah. It was work. Cool. But let's say you recreate that exact situation, which would never happen again, right? That exact
Yeah.
coyote, his exact mood, his exact whatever, and then you played a different sound, whether it was a pup distress, coyote fight, rabbit, whatever, would that same coyote come running in, right? Like, we don't know. I mean,
Yeah.
it's your theory versus mine, like, so
Yeah.
that's what's always interesting about all this is none of it's provable.
Yeah. No, you'll just get your own theories and you figure out which theories you like the best, and then you roll with those theories.
Yeah. Like I have a theory too. So, where we've hunted the last handful of years is clear down in southern Arizona. So we're dealing with the border, right? And the coyotes, nobody, it seems like nobody hunts coyotes in old Mexico,
Yeah.
because obviously they're not worth anything. So, we had really good hunting down there in this area, 4 or 5 years ago. And one of the ranchers there told us that, yeah, he mentioned specifically that all these coyotes, like he thinks they migrate up from Mexico every year because,
Yeah.
there's so many of them down there after they all have litters that there's no place for them to go except to migrate up to Arizona.
Yeah.
Well, here comes Trump and puts in the wall, and ever since that wall went up, it's like that whole area, it seems like the coyote numbers aren't near what they were. Is that just in our
Yeah.
head? Is that like a fluke deal? I know they had some rabbit die-offs and things like that, but when you look at that wall though, I mean, there's like, I don't know if anybody listening to this has ever been down and seen the wall, but it's like maybe a 3-inch gap in between those metal
Yeah.
slats. Like maybe a pup coyote could get through there, maybe, but an adult coyote, I don't think there's any way they could.
No, it's nothing like what it used to be. I mean, it was just like three pieces of wood and maybe a barb, one strand of barbed
Wow.
wire. I mean, there was nothing there. They
Oh,
could go wherever they wanted. But
coyotes, the coyotes, they were all running across that sucker.
yeah. My theory with it is it used to replenish the areas quicker because you had a definite line on where there was a bunch of coyotes that were virgin, not getting messed with at all. And then you had a bunch of coyotes over here, and with the aerial gunning Arizona does, and then the hunters and stuff like that. I think those other coyotes just eventually end up moving up and replenishing the ones that were there, and it makes for more consistent continued hunting. But since that wall's been up, things have changed definitely down there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I was kind of hoping Biden was going to rip it down, but
No, he
it didn't
needs to
work.
finish it.
Well, yeah. That's what we need to do on our scouting when we start talking about coyote scouting. If you're down next to the border, just start looking where there's no wall. All right, I can tell you
Yeah.
that. Where the coyotes
They
can just
need
run freely from Mexico up into wherever you're hunting.
to make like wildlife pathways f through it that they can control humans to not go through, but that
Yeah.
won't ever happen.
No, that would be pretty cool. I remember when we were researching that wall. You remember that picture we came across, that black bear standing on top of that damn wall? That was
Yeah.
pretty wild. I still don't know how. I mean, damn, that wall's like 30 foot tall.
Yeah.
Just smooth metal. Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
That's
I don't
impressive.
know. He looked like he didn't know how to get back down, though.
That's true. That's true. You know, the one cool part about Arizona that I don't know, where would you rate Arizona on all the states that you've got to hunt? Where would you put it as far as your list of favorites?
Probably one of my favorites. I've been to other states that I think the hunting might be better, but the amount of diversity in terrain that you can hunt in Arizona is pretty crazy. Like you go from northern part where you got mountains, junipers, big canyons, yellow grass. I mean, you got it all the way down to the border. You got all the different types of terrain. I mean, 5,000 over 5,000 foot to down to nothing. I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, for me, coming from, you know, Nebraska, where it's 97% private ground, I mean, I've
Yeah.
always had this fascination with going to these states where there was a massive amount of public land, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking 50-50 or greater. Seems
Yeah.
like, you know, you can find some really, really good public land spots.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, just something about it's like me driving around Nebraska and just looking, being like, oh, that looks pretty good. Oh, but guess what? I don't know who owns that. Can't figure out your, you know, down in Arizona or states like that, you're driving around, you're like, oh, that looks good. You pull up on X, you're like, oh, damn, it's public. All right, cool. Let's walk out there and make a stand, you know?
Yeah.
And then you end up killing it. You park off the highway, you know,
Yeah.
cars going by, and you just walk out there 200, 300, 400 yards, find a nice little spot to set up, and boom, you kill a coyote. And you're like, this is pretty damn sweet because
Yeah.
anybody could have done just what we did right now, you know?
Yeah. That part is cool. That is fun for me too, because Kansas is, I think, one of the five fewest public land states in the U.S., right there with Nebraska, or
Yeah.
even worse, maybe. But yeah, going out there and being able to do that, or Nevada even, where it's like 90%
Oh,
public. I
yeah,
mean,
even
that's
more.
pretty cool.
You know, on that last day, you know, we had probably one of the most cool stands I've been on. You know, I've only ever done it once where we called in a bobcat and a coyote on the same stand. You may have done it more just because you're in more bobcat country in Kansas. But, you know, that one particular stand I'd done before was when we were filming on the last stand up here in Nebraska. It wasn't bobcat season, so we couldn't shoot the cat. But,
Yeah.
you know, as you guys will see when you watch, you know, the new season come out, that first stand of the morning, public land, and we call in and kill a bobcat and a coyote on the same stand.
Yep.
That was pretty wild.
Yeah, that was fun. That was cool. And it was a good cat.
Yeah, you know, that when that cat showed up, you know, we were already, you know, back to, we've talked about calling in cats. I had a podcast with Rick about calling in cats, and I don't know, my style of calling in cats is a lot different than others. And, you know, this cat showed up within the first minute or two. You know, you saw him actually slinking out through there. The sun was just coming up to our left, so it was kind of beaming across that brush, and I don't even know what that was out there. It was just some sort of cover brush and weeds
Yeah.
and stuff. And you saw him cutting through there a little bit.
Yep.
And you know, 175 yards or so. And you thought it was a coyote.
Yeah. Well, when I first saw him, he was like 500, 600 yards, and all I saw, you know, it was light colored something coming, and I knew we had one coming. I just thought it was a coyote. It was coming quick at first. I mean, it covered 200, 300 yards in no time, and then it just stopped. And that's when I kind of started to figure it was probably a cat when I couldn't see it anymore, and it was still out in front of us somewhere.
What did too, you know, because, you know, you were down below me. I had you, you know, and we're filming, and you'd like to shoot him with that shotgun. So I kind of had you down, kind of tucked in with the one camera. Paul was out in front of you, and I was kind of up a little higher. I had a little bit better vantage point down into that brush. And so I could tell, you know, that you saw something coming. And yeah, when it popped out in that little gap and sat down and the sun hit off it, it was so white. I was like, well, there's a coyote
Yeah.
right there, you know. And I
Yeah.
remember swinging over real slow because it was just standing. I couldn't tell if it was standing or sitting just with my naked eye. So I'm like swinging over real slow and I get my scope on it and I'm like, oh shit, it's a bobcat. You know, it's like
Yeah.
adrenaline hits you and I'm like, oh God, don't screw this up, you know?
The lighting was perfect for it too.
You know, because that cat sat down and I mean, it seems like when the cat sits down, it's usually over. I mean, I've seen them get up and
Yeah.
come, but man, I mean, in that particular one, I sat there. I don't know. I played the call another 6, 8 minutes trying to, maybe not that long, maybe 4 or 5 minutes actually, few little squeaky sounds, and that, and then you could tell, and I was looking in the scope, and you could tell he was starting to get jittery, and like, oh shit, he's getting ready to go. I'm like, I better tank him. And you know, a cat sitting down chest on is like, it's not a very big target, you know?
No, it's not.
I mean, it's like 3-4 inches maybe, and I'm like, okay, dummy, don't rush this, you know, let's take our time. And you know, ended up shooting him, you know, dropped him right there. But then, you know, I went into some pup distress because now we'd been on stand about, I don't know, 7-8 minutes. We had heard, did the coyotes howl before I shot that cat or after?
Before. I think you started off with some howls real quick.
I just wanted to kind of get a quick beat on if there was anything in this big valley we were calling, you know, and this coyotes howled way off to our right. So then as soon as I shot the cat, I'm like, all right, we've been playing prey distress for plenty long enough now. Okay, let's get in some pup distress and things like that, coyote fights. And then, you know, three, four minutes later, here come this coyote, you know, looping the hill down below us. You beat me to the trigger on that one.
Well, luckily, I think he stopped behind a tree that I could see him, but you couldn't see him anymore. That's probably
true. You made the quick transition, you know, from that, you know, you always run that shotgun rifle combo, which, you know, I talk about that shotgun first up in your shoulder, rifle off to the side. Yeah. And when that coyote's dipping like that, you're like, okay, you know instantly that this is not a shotgun coyote anymore. Yeah. You know, you transitioned up onto your rifle. And like you said, he popped out right there, 125 yards or so. And
yeah. Chip shot.
Canned him.
Yeah. That was a pretty cool stand, especially to start off the day. I mean, public ground doing stuff like that, that's always fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know, those cats down there, I tell you, man, I've shot a couple cats out in your country hunting with Rick and you guys, you know, but man, those cats down there, I know probably on the fur market, they're not great because they probably don't have real thick under fur. Man, yeah. They're sure pretty. Like, they are spot pretty. Wise, just, hey, yep. They're good looking cats.
You get some big ones down there too. I mean, we have big ones up here, but it seems like majority down there are good size. I don't know if that's a product of being in the desert or what that is. For whatever reason,
you know, I was wondering that, you know, I was talking to a guy that mounts bobcats about it, and you know, it's nothing for them guys to get, you know, 35, even some 40 pound cats, especially way north, you know. And I'm like, and I think they're just thicker, like they're fatter, because I can't imagine a cat. I mean, we killed two cats on this trip, we'll talk about that second one, but they were long. Like, I was holding those up like hind legs, you know, right up underneath my chin, and hell, their feet were down at my shins. You know, they were like as long as those 25, 30 pound coyotes we were shooting.
Yeah.
But you're like, and they were like 26, 28 pounders. So I'm like, well, how do you get a 30? They got to be fatter. I don't know how much like bigger they can get.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. They are prettier down there though. I don't know. It's more consistently good spots, it seems like.
You see that in Texas too, like down maybe that whole southern border, you know, the cats they kill down in Texas are like real crazy looking spots on them too.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's cool. You know, that first cat we actually killed the day before was an interesting one as well. We actually killed a cat on that same exact stand the year before.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like a hunt. Like, I don't know how many people have 100% cat stands, but you know,
We got one.
Yeah. You know, and that was, you know, that cat showed up later in the stand. It was 8-9 minutes, and I'd ran through 4 or 5 different prey distress sounds, and I hosed you on that one because that cat was coming pretty good around, and you were purposely tucked down in this little pocket down below. I was up high off this bank, kind of our little setup we do. You know, I'm up high overwatch with the rifle. You're down low in the thick shit with the shotgun, you know, and this cat was coming around the corner. I shouldn't have said a damn thing, but I lip squeaked to kind of alert you. And instantly this cat just freaking freezes and looks right up at me. And I'm like, oh, dummy, you know, you ruined this, you know? Yeah. And of course it stops right behind about the thickest mesquite bush you could ever imagine.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And you guys are down below, and I'm like, oh, God, damn, now this is just not going to work now, and I'm going to have to shoot this thing, but I don't have a good shot. And you couldn't see anything because you had a big mesquite bush off to your left.
Yeah.
The cat ended up being right out in the wide open.
Yeah.
But he was like, I had to shoot through 6 feet of mesquite bush to get him, but.
Yeah, you made a good shot on him, though.
Well, that was one of those. I was really like, for seriously, like 6 minutes, man, the cat never took its eye off of us. Now, at that point, when the call's way down below us off to our right, and the cat's looking right up at you, I'm like, yeah, this is over for sure. I gotta figure out how I can shoot. But I'm like zooming my scope in and studying, because there's like, look like 1,000 branches, and I'm just trying to look for one little gap where I can like make a kill shot on this cat.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where he was getting nervous, and I was like, yeah, I got to do something here. And luckily he crouched down just a little bit, and it took his, would have been his right half of his head. And it kind of put it into this little, like 2-inch little opening. And he wasn't, luckily he wasn't very far, about 75 yards or whatever. And I ended up shooting him right in the eye. But
yeah, you made a great shot on him. That's the same exact thing that happened last year. Came from behind me, other end of the draw, came behind me. Never got to see it. But I think if we do that one again, I'm sitting facing the other direction this time.
Yeah. I mean, if we were smart, we would. I mean, it's 2 for 2, and the cats came from the same end of that draw both times, you know? So it's like, okay, for whatever reason, you know, they seems like they're always down to the left, you know?
We've called coyotes there before too, in that area. Yeah, and they always come have. From the same way too. Those two, that first year we ever hunted it, those two came from that same direction.
Yeah. I always wonder that, you know, it's like you make stands over and over, you know, it's part of the deal, right? Like, then that's just what you'll do. You know, if you hunt it the first time, you're kind of winging it. And then the second time you're like, okay, I'm going to next, maybe you sat up perfect anyway the first time, but then the next time you're always refining, right? Like you're set up like, oh man, I think next time if we sat just right over there, and it may be just a small, minute 20, 30 yard move, right? To where you're going to set up, you know, if the wind and everything is similar direction wise. But yeah, I like that part of it too, like refining its stands as you hunt them over and over as you get better, you know.
It'll hose you real quick though when they get a bunch of rain and you have grass down there. We learned that a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I mean,
grass is not your friend down there.
Yeah, that changes the whole stand layout completely down there where it's a lot more flat with the tall grass.
But yeah, luckily that was not something we had to deal with this year, but last year, man, I mean, especially when you're trying to film, forget it. Like, you can kill coyotes, you don't get to see them that great, but man, filming wise, forget it.
Yeah.
No, it's an interesting place. I love going down there. We talked about next year what we might do for a filming trip. You know, we might swing over to New Mexico, give that a shot.
Yeah.
You know, hunt some new country over there with some new guys. I don't know. The diversity, though, to me, you know, that's another cool part about Arizona to me, or any of those states, probably New Mexico, Texas, you know, where you just have the ability to, you hit play on the e-call. You really don't know what showing up.
Yeah.
I mean, out here, it's coyotes, right? You know, down there, though, shit, you know, gray fox, bobcats, coyotes, they could all show up and you just never know.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
I have to dial in those gray fox one of these times. The last couple gray fox I saw you shoot down there, that was pretty entertaining. We haven't done that for a couple years, though.
Did kicking ass three. It works every kick time. Kicking ass
three. There we go. Well, heck yeah. No, that's funny. It would be interesting to see when that video comes out, you know. Do you think down there the shotgunning opportunities are tougher than what you're used to in Kansas? Is it tougher? Do you think it's tougher to shotgun coyotes in that country than opposed to some of that cedar country that you know, when you hunt in Kansas?
I don't think so, mostly because when you have a hard charger down there, they're coming super quick. Like, we get the quick hard chargers here, and that's why I love doing it. But down there, it seems like you get a higher percentage of the hard chargers. And I think that just makes it easier to me. If a coyote's running full bore in, it's a dumb deal. They're not looking.
Yep.
Yeah. But
yeah, I know sometimes it's, you know, we talk, there's like a very specific shotgun coyote, right? Like, like very rarely the coyotes that are just diddy bopping in, unless you're just tucked in so well. That's where I talk about like the cedar trees and stuff, like in your country, being able to really you know, where the coyote has no clue you're there. You can let those coyotes keep working. It seems like down there, though, in Arizona, when we're like tucked into a mesquite bush or, you know, pile of cactus or whatever it is, like, yeah, if they're running hard to the call, they have super tunnel vision, you know, they're just like looking right at the call coming. But when they're diddy bopping, it's like they take one peek over real quick and they're like, oh, shit, you know,
yeah,
you know, flaring out of there. And then you're shooting them in the ass with a shotgun, you know, running off.
I think that aspect is easier here just because you do have the cedars and you can hide a little bit easier. I think camo probably blends in a little bit better with cedars and the tall yellow grass that we have versus down there. I feel like the diddy bopper coyotes down there definitely pick you out a lot quicker than they do up here.
Yeah, I know filming wise, we've been burned a couple times by like that where you forget, like we tell ourselves, hey, trotting, diddy bopping coyote, we're stopping at shooting with the rifle, right? There's a very specific car. And then we see this one coming in and we're like, oh, yeah, we're going to shotgun it. Here we go. And then and then pretty soon it freaking, and they're like, God dang it. We knew better.
Yeah. Yep. It's different down there too. I mean, just the habitat. I mean, up north in the junipers is about the same as the cedars here. But
yeah.
Down in the desert stuff, I mean, most all the bases for all the brush or just sticks coming out of the ground for 3 or 4 feet before they actually have any branches. So I think we just stick out, especially with two cameras and two hunters, and be a lot different, just one guy. But
and it never fails. It seems like 90% of the time it's a south wind of some kind.
Yeah, always.
We're
south.
Always like looking right back into the sun all day, which makes it, you know, there's zero shadows to try to hide in. And you know, it's like, damn.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the one day it doesn't matter, though.
Yeah, some of them it doesn't. It's that's why I just, every coyote's just so different, it seems like. And I wish they were all dumb. Like, wouldn't that be, I mean, the day we've been there when it's been like, you're like, every one of these coyotes is so dumb. It's like, this is fun. And then every other, sometimes we've been down there and it's like, damn, these things are like on it today. They are just pegging us every single time. Like, we can't get away with anything.
Yeah.
That's where that shotgun rifle thing is super important. You know, I think a lot of guys don't think a lot about it. You know, they carry in a shotgun with them for those hard chargers, but yet they lay the shotgun beside them, you know, and they're sitting there with their rifle, right? And then it's like, you know, by the time that hard, the one that you is the perfect shotgun one come running in, when you have to make that movement to drop your rifle and come up with a shotgun, well, that even a hard charger is going to see that, right? Feel out of there. So I think that, you know, I know you do that a lot. You know, I don't worry about it anymore, but that you've kind of got that, not that down pat, you know, that shotgun rifle combo.
Yeah, I'm pretty decent at getting rid of the shotgun and getting the rifle up. And honestly, it's easier to switch because the coyote hard charger coming close sees movement's going to peel out immediately, and then he's out of shotgun range. And you already made the decision to go to the shotgun, so you're screwed. But the coyote that's out diddy bopping or, you know, stops at 100 yards, slowly put your shotgun down, your rifle up, it's more apt to either stop and look at you, which by that time you got your rifle up and it's perfect, or stand there looking at you, wondering what the heck that is, versus the close coyote.
Yeah, that's no doubt the way to do it. And it works to me if you're hunting by yourself, a little more of a challenge. But if you have two guys, like I feel like the setup we run, like we can kill them all. Like, you know, you still have your rifle because down there, there's all these shooting lanes, right? It's not like you can't see everything. You might be able to see the coyote, but my angle, the damn thing's standing behind a bush, you know? So you can still rifle those, but we got all bases covered, you know, depending on what coyote's coming in, you know?
Yeah. I still get a fair amount of rifle shots here and there. There's always, you know, 3 or 4 handful that I get to shoot with the rifle every year. Just stuff you can't see.
Yep. No, that's, you know, spreading out, covering ground, deciding, you know, that's all part of it, right? Like, how far do you spread out? You know, lose communication, but you gain maybe some extra avenues and visibility, you know, pieces. You know, it's all part of the chess game, you know? Like, okay, how are we going to do this here to kill everything?
Yeah. Well, and we got that from contests too. I mean, we set up that way, same exact way for contests. And it's a good way to just be efficient and make sure you get every coyote down.
Yeah, killing efficiency. That's what separates the men from the boys sometimes.
Sometimes you also get to check in and you get beat by somebody who's like, oh, we killed 13. How many did you see? Well, we called in 28. Sometimes you'll get beat by some inefficiency too, but it's rare.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I've always been in the mindset that, if you walk away from a contest and say, hey man, we maybe messed one coyote up, killed
Yeah.
everything we saw, like really, you did everything you had control over, right? I mean, like,
Yeah.
so okay, some days you win them,
Yeah.
some days you don't. But yeah, it's super frustrating. I remember going to those St. Francis contests, the Midwest back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And this was what, probably for me, this was 20 years ago, maybe 18 years ago,
Yeah.
I hadn't obviously had it all figured out by then, and I hunted with my dad and we'd kill six or seven coyotes and I'd be like, it's like all we shot at, like, and you're right, and you hear these teams like, oh man, we saw like called in 20 coyotes, killed
Yeah.
12 of them, and I was like, I'd love to kill called in 20 coyotes,
Yeah. Yeah. That learning curve.
Oh yeah. And then you're like, okay, I gotta do a better job of finding places to hunt and all that stuff that comes
Yeah.
with that. So
The opportunity.
well man, any plans coming up for next year other than our filming trip? Anything on the bucket list you want to knock out next year?
A few less contests than this year,
Few less
at least
contests.
on
How many
yeah,
how
till I
many
get my.
contests did you end up doing?
I think I did six this year,
Damn.
so usually I used to do five or six, but it's been a while. It's usually like three or four now, but yeah, it was mostly all Kansas ones too. One Oklahoma one, that was the only one we did good in. All the Kansas ones flopped, but.
That's good. It seems like those are all later, right? Like nothing's real early. Is that all January, February kind of stuff?
There's one December one that we do every year. There's usually one a week or two before Christmas. There's two or three a week or two before Christmas. And then January through March is usually where most of them are, mostly January.
I always forget that. It seems like I'm always used to these earlier contests, more Western contests, that are, November, December, because all their big game seasons are usually done by then. I always forget these Midwestern ones. It seems like they're all later because they got to wait for all the deer seasons and everything to get over.
Yeah.
It's just
Deer season, December 31st. As soon as that's done, all the deer hunters become coyote hunters, and that's when all the contests start.
Well, you need all those donators in there, right? Not
Yeah,
everybody
you
can win
do.
them. So,
Yeah. Just sucks when you're the donator.
well, I just hopefully you're getting better, not pouting, and the maturities, as you get older,
Frustration and high
frustrations,
competitive
handling your
level.
frustrations, right?
Yeah. I think you meant to say, Dustin, you have a high competitive level, is what you meant to say. No,
Yeah.
it has changed as I've gotten older, just realizing those days happen and sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. I
Yeah.
mean, I'm already in the groove where we're pushing as hard as we can in most of these contests. It's not like you could do a ton different. I mean, you could have a backup plan maybe. Like an hour away, just get out of the rut you're in and drive and hunt something else, but then you're lining up twice as much ground. But
One last thing I want to talk about on our trip to Arizona, you told me a story from one of those contests that just I've been thinking about it ever since because it's totally out of her mind. The story of me, you talked to that guy that they hunted throughout their stuff in the morning
yeah.
and they realized they didn't have enough ground to like hunt the whole day. I
Yeah.
think you told me they didn't even kill a single coyote. So they're like, well, we don't have any options. We're going to go back and make all the same stands in the afternoon that they
Yeah.
just got done making in the morning and killed like nine coyotes that afternoon, making the same stands that they had just made that same morning. Like,
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was Heath, and he's gonna appreciate me calling him out on this. We'll see if he listens to the podcast or not. But it was a buddy here in Kansas, and they were struggling. It was one of the ones we were struggling on. They were only like, I don't know, 40 minutes probably away from where we were hunting and ran through their ground in the morning, and they didn't have enough ground to make it through the day. And they liked all the stuff they hunted that morning and ended up going back to the same exact stands in the afternoon. And he told me they were sitting within like a foot or two of where they were sitting that morning. and ended up killing 9 coyotes that afternoon on the same exact stuff they called that morning and didn't get a single coyote.
That's,
so
you know, that just blows everything like we've ever thought, you know, like,
yeah.
But it goes to show, I guess, if you make a stand and don't see a damn coyote, did you really make that stand at all? You know, did it really ruin anything? Does it really, you know, does it matter? You know, it's interesting. You know, was that just the switch deal, right? Was something happened with the weather, barometric, something where those coyotes finally decided now their bubbles went from being super tight to like opening up a little bit where they're like, okay, we're coming to the call now. It's just it'd be fascinating to dissect that a little bit more, the exact type of properties. Was it, you know, big open stuff maybe, and then for some reason the coyote, or vice versa, was it thick and the coyotes finally moved into the thick stuff? And the, you know, it's always, it'd be interesting to see, you know, exactly why that worked the way it did.
I don't know the sounds that they used or anything like that, but I know he's probably more like us where he's not going to hunt a whole stand with just prey distress. And then he didn't come back in the afternoon and just use coyotes or fights, you know, and stuff like that. I'm sure he played both.
He threw it all out there the first go
I'm
around.
Sure. I'm sure he did. Yeah. But there's only like two reasons that that could happen. Either the coyotes weren't there in the morning and then were there in the afternoon, or they were shut off and something triggers them later in the day. Something changed and they decided to come in. So
to me, I mean, it's, I can't honestly say I have ever considered that, you know what I'm saying? Like, especially in a contest day, I mean, I'm going to take it and consider it from here on out. Right. Like, let's say you had some badass spots lined up for the morning and you're like, damn, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hell, let's go try, you know, they're badass spots. Let's try them in the afternoon. I'm going to add it to my bag. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to put it in perspective, I mean, we made, I think it was like 25 or 26 stands that day, and we hunted all badass stuff that we've slayed them on before. And I think we only ended up killing like 3, seeing maybe like 4 or 5, but it just wasn't happening at all. And we just kept burning through stands onto stands onto stands onto stands. And when we could have just stopped and been like, you know what, that stuff in the morning was really, really good. There should have been coyotes there. Let's go try it again. But they also, I will say, they did have, I think they had sun that afternoon, and we were in cloud cover overcast all day, even though we were like 30, 40 minutes away. They had different weather in the afternoon. So that also throws a kink into it. I mean, I don't know. Did the weather change, get the coyotes on their feet and they were moving around? They just happened to be in those spots in the afternoon? Or did the weather change trigger coyotes that were sitting there not doing anything, not wanting to move, to finally come in?
I'm sure you were sitting there like, God damn it. Here I'm prepared. I have this whole plan. These guys didn't even have enough ground to even hunt the day, and they just totally whipped us.
Oh, yeah. We even scouted the week before. I mean, we did all the right things.
There's
no reason that we should have done as poorly as we did, but and it wasn't human error. It wasn't like we messed anything up. It was, just
coyotes weren't there. It's interesting. That makes you scratch your head and think, damn, I'm probably overthinking most shit, you know, honestly, when you start thinking about that, right? Like, that's wild. That is wild.
That makes you think about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, buddy, I'm going to shut her down, man. I appreciate you taking the time. You're not too disappointed and have to leave work early to come do a podcast with me, but I appreciate you jumping on.
Yeah, no worries. I'll go back to work. It'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, I hope you shoot a pile of kite or snow geese. You're going to have to travel, though. You know?
I know. That's the bad thing. I honestly think that's done. I think we're on to mushroom season. Like, we had a tornado and a big rain already last night. Yeah. Like, it's morel season and turkey season. Probably done with snow geese already, even though right now should be prime time. But
heck yeah. Well, I'm on to baseball, lawn mowing. So, no morels or turkeys for me, but you know, it's change of the seasons nonetheless.
Yeah.
What
sports dad.
Yeah, sports dad. What's your Instagram handle? Anybody wants to jump on and follow some of your exploits out there?
It'd be Prairie Yote.
Old Prairie Yote, at Prairie Yote. There you go. I'm gonna follow Dustin on Instagram. So I appreciate you jumping on, man. It's been fun. I told we've been there. It's been like 2 months since we've been to Arizona. Honestly, I totally forgot about a lot of that. So it's kind of good to refresh that. All those good memories in my head.
Yeah, to be honest, the second bobcat you're talking about, I didn't have any idea what you're talking about until you said it was behind me in the bush, and then it finally triggered. I completely forgot about it.
That's what it's all about. Remembering those cool stories, stuff we can talk about for a long time, you know?
Yep. We need to do it like the day after we get back, and then we'll remember everything's fresh.
This podcast would have been 20 times better, trust me. You know?
Yeah. Better stories.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate all you guys listening. You know, giving this the podcast the support, making it the number one predator hunting podcast out there. If you're looking for more information about myself, you can go to my website, which is coyotecraze.com. That'll get you links to the last stand episodes that Dustin and I talk about. It'll give you links to the coyote schools that I put on or are gearing up to put on for next season, some of my sponsors and things like that. And also, you know, the 5-star reviews that you guys give this podcast go a super long way. So if you're listening on Spotify or iTunes, you know, I greatly appreciate you jumping on there and giving it a 5-star review. Like I said, that goes a long way to keep this this podcast going. But obviously we can't do this without the sponsors, so I need to thank them. We have Sig Optics, Swagger Bipods, Hornady, Lucky Duck Predator Calls, Silencer Central, Cryptek, Onyx Hunt, and of course Eastman's for bringing this all to you guys. Head over to their website to see their full line of other podcasts they have. As well as maybe getting a subscription to their hunting magazine, but you can go over there and that's eastmans.com. But appreciate you guys listening, and we will catch you next time right here on the Eastman's Predator Pros Podcast.